You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
The world's on fire, and silver is about to go absolutely ballistic. But before we dive into this explosive rally, we owe you something first. We've been away longer than we ever planned, and for that, we're sorry. But trust us, it was worth the wait. Because starting now, we're back in full swing, and we'll be dropping new, hard-hitting silver updates every single day for you, our loyal viewers. And what better way to return than with the most insane silver story we've ever told? Right now, something is happening behind the scenes of the global economy, something so massive, so chaotic, that it's setting the stage for what could be the biggest silver rally in history. $500 silver? That number used to sound ridiculous. But with gold already breaking records, inflation spiraling, and geopolitical flashpoints lighting up across the world, suddenly that sky-high target doesn't seem so far-fetched. And just as this chaos starts to boil over, guess who's walking back into the center of it all? Donald Trump. His return to the spotlight, combined with an already volatile economy, is creating the perfect storm. Tariffs, trade wars, currency friction, and wild monetary policy shifts are now back on the table, and markets are scrambling to find safe ground. Silver, often overlooked, is suddenly looking like the only lifeboat left that hasn't already been swarmed. But that's not even the half of it. The real question you need to ask is this: why is silver moving so violently right now? And why are the world's smartest investors loading up before the headlines even catch on? Stay with me, because by the end of this video, you'll see why $500 silver may not be a fantasy anymore. It might be the only rational outcome.
Say that it isn't chaotic. Nobody would say it's anybody has ever, even Trump version one, has been like Trump version two. And I was hoping, and I think many other people were hoping, that he would have basically had 4 years to think about what he was going to do if he got back in again, and would be a more usual, more old-fashioned, more, you know, like people generally want the presidents of countries to be, statesmanly. And instead, I think that it's clear to say that once he got in, he went on a bit of a rampage and tried to do, you know, several major policy pivots, which would take most people 20 years, let alone four. I tried to do it all in, you know, 12 weeks. And I think that really upended the apple cart, or whatever metaphor you want to use. And, you know, if you believe in Mr. Trump, he's playing 4D chess. He's just so clever that, you know, you can't expect to understand what he's doing. And if you're a hater, you just think he's off his trolley. And, you know, I can reserve judgment because, well, I've got a judgment, and the judgment is the market isn't actually taking him that seriously, which is kind of interesting in its own right. It can't be bad for precious metals, because you can only really affect the market in the short term. And you can do that by injecting vast quantities of noise or liquidity. But in the long term, the market always gets its way, because it is basically one man, $1, one vote. And our democracy is one man. We don't care how many dollars you've got, one vote. But the market is one man multiplied by his dollars. Ooh. It are the votes. So the market really does vote with its feet. And the smartest people get way more votes, and you know, not necessarily the nicest people, but the market is constantly at war to make a decision on what the devil's going on, and it can usually get it right about a year out. Normally, if you look at the market today, the price is what the price should be in about a year. It's that's the calculation horizon. So what you're seeing now is where we're going to be in a year, which is in a state of heightened tension. Hence, gold is where it is. Yeah. And obviously, all the other precious metals follow, not necessarily for exactly the same reason. Gold is for war, and that's why it's up. Silver is kind of like the everyday man's gold. I mean, you can't buy your groceries in gold. No one ever did. They bought maybe their houses and maybe their horses and did big transactions with gold. And that is still really what you use gold for now, because that's what governments use it for. But the man in the street, his wealth was generally in silver. or that would be his transactional, large transactional currency. So you'd have things like crowns, big silver dollars, that sort of thing. And then you get down into copper, which is token money, always has been token money. There's a very interesting story, history. I used to be a professional numismaticist. I used to get paid for my knowledge of old coins. Can you believe that? One of the things that I learned actually quite recently, there was an emperor called Claudius who was basically the end of the line of the Judeo-Claudians, Augustus and his lot. And he basically escaped the tyranny of Caligula. And he ruled and he ruled. But if you want a beautiful silver denarius of Claudius, you won't find one. They aren't around. And you end up going, well, where are they? Because you can find bucket loads of Neros and bucket loads of Julius Caesars.
Silver is already exploding, and if you've been paying attention, the signs were everywhere. In just the past year, silver has surged over 30%, outpacing even gold in percentage gains and smashing through resistance levels we haven't seen since 2011. It's now sitting comfortably above $38 an ounce, flirting with 14-year highs, and some analysts say $40 could hit before the end of Q3. This isn't just a bump, it's the beginning of something much bigger. We're seeing record trading volumes, a 22% increase in open interest since January, and the largest monthly gain since the Reddit-driven squeeze in 2021. Silver is back on every major radar, and for good reason. Unlike gold, which has been hoarded and hyped by institutions for decades, silver is the sleeper, quiet, volatile, and ready to explode the second it wakes up. And guess what? It's waking up. This kind of performance doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's the result of global forces converging, forces that are pushing silver past the tipping point. Traders are starting to panic buy, resistance is crumbling, and those who mocked $50 price targets just months ago are now whispering about triple digits. But if this rally is just beginning, what exactly is fueling it? And more importantly, how long before it really starts to run? Stick around, because the deeper we go, the clearer it becomes. This is not just another silver spike. It's the first phase of something far more dramatic.
Claudius, you won't find any. And what actually happened was he was a very good custodian of the Roman treasury. So he collected up all the silver and minted vast quantities of copper, which was basically the equivalent of paper money in those days. So he swapped the silver for copper and he had big, rooms full of silver because he pulled in all the silver of the past that he could get his hands on. And he didn't remint it with his head on it. He minted copper with his head on it and pushed that out. So he pulled all in all the silver, used it as a reserve currency, silver and gold. So, but silver particularly. So there wasn't any of many of his coins with his head on because he didn't mint any of them. He was hoarding the silver. And then along came Nero, who went, "Hey, whoopee! Look at all this silver Uncle left behind. Yay! Let's go spend it." And Nero went out and spent it all. And therefore, there's tons of silver coins with Nero's head on. And that is kind of the history of money. So even back then, there was the equivalent of fiat, and copper was fiat or bronze, as those different types of copper bronze coins at the time. So that was fiat. Silver was money, and gold obviously was the top of the pinnacle of money. Although it wasn't worth anywhere near as much as a ratio to silver back then. It was either 5 or 10 times. I think at one point it was only 5 ounces of silver to 1 ounce of gold, and it's only history that has change that ratio to 100 to 1 now, which is kind of interesting.
The fire underneath silver isn't just coming from traders or headlines. It's being fueled by something far more structural, far more relentless, and far more dangerous, a supply deficit the market can no longer ignore. For the fifth year in a row, silver is in a deep, grinding shortfall. In 2025 alone, the deficit is expected to hit 117.6 million ounces. Stack that onto the four-year total from 2021 to 2024, and we're looking at a combined shortfall of nearly 700 million ounces. More than 10 months of total global mine supply just gone. And the silver that's left? It's vanishing. Above ground stockpiles have been drawn down by over 800 million ounces in the last 4 years. That's not a temporary squeeze, that's a structural collapse in availability. Meanwhile, mine production is crawling, up just 0.9% in 2024, and nowhere near enough to offset the demand tsunami. The market is chewing through silver faster than it can be replaced, and there's no backup plan. Experts like Philip Newman are warning that we're nowhere near rebalancing. Peter Krauth calls it a slow motion burn, one that's tightening the noose with every passing quarter. And here's where it gets terrifying. The price hasn't even begun to reflect how bad this is. Deficits this severe should be triggering panic, yet the mainstream still sees silver as a niche asset. That's going to change. Because as supply continues to evaporate and investment demand starts to pile in, we're looking at a market that simply cannot absorb the pressure. The fuse is already lit, and when the final ounces disappear, the detonation will be felt across the financial world.
Say, first of all, we've got to address why. Okay? And if you think about gold, why has gold taken off? And why hasn't silver taken off? And you can forget silver for a minute, and you can just ask, why has gold taken off? Yeah? Now, I'm just going to do a quick query because I forget the exact number and I want to get it right. How much silver is mined each year? And this is an interesting number, but I don't want to get it wrong and be one of those people that blurt out numbers. So anyway, fascinating number. There is 3,000, I know this number by heart, 3,200 tons of gold mined every year. Okay? Hold that number. Silver, 25,000 tons, not even 10 times more, about eight times more. I don't know. Do the math yourself. So, you know, gold, there's silver is not 10 times as much silver mined every year as gold. And yet it's 100 to 1. So if you said, well, I'm going to value silver in terms of how much is mined, and I'm going to value gold about how much is mined, you expect silver to be like a tenth of the price of gold, i.e. $320 an ounce. So that's interesting right there. But then you say, well, why is that? Why is gold so high? And why hasn't silver followed? Well, that's actually a simple answer. You don't have to agree with it, but it's a simple answer. Gold is for war. Silver isn't for war. Gold is for war. Countries hold gold for one purpose only, for the eventuality of war. There's no other reason for a country to have gold. They're never going to monetize it again. You're never going to be going into a store. You're never going to be buying a car with a, you know, three or four or $20 gold eagles or whatever they're going to be monetized at. You're never going to do that. It's always going to be confetti, right? Because bad money drives out good, and gold is good money, and therefore bad money drives it out, and gold goes into vaults and confetti goes into circulation. That's how money works. But why is silver, you know, only 10 times more of that made a year, and yet it's a hundredth of the price? The answer is governments are buying gold because governments are getting stressed out with all these wild men in power, and gold is bullets. You buy bullets with gold. You know, at the end of the Second World War, America, in practice, owned all the gold. And the reason it owned all the gold was it basically was the guys that were the first into the vaults of other countries that lost. Yeah, and the countries that won and bought all that kit off America paid in gold. You don't pay in confetti, you pay in gold. And then you don't have any anymore. And then, you know, you're in trouble, aren't you? So countries have to own gold if they're going to fight a war, whether they want to or not. They've got to have gold. So they buy it. They don't buy silver. Silver's not for war. In fact, and I keep telling this story because I think it's quite important to understand. When the Americans pulled out of the Philippines, they took the gold in a boat. They chucked the silver in the bay. So think about that. They took the gold. I think it was a submarine. It doesn't matter. Battleship, submarine. Gold is for war. They took that. They threw the silver in the bay. Now, the Japanese got a load of American prisoners and made them jump into the bay and fish it out again. But that's another story. You can go read it. It's a very fascinating story. But silver is not for war. Silver is the junior and in some cases the fast horse of gold. Silver is... I mean, this is an unkind way of saying it. Silver is poor man's gold. Yeah.
And while supply is collapsing, demand is erupting like never before, because silver is no longer just a monetary metal. It's become the lifeblood of the green revolution, and the industrial world is consuming it at a rate the mining sector can't hope to match. In 2025, a staggering 83% of all silver produced is being swallowed up by industrial use. And that number is only heading in one direction, up. The solar industry alone devoured 140 million ounces in 2024, and projections show it could reach 200 million by 2028. Solar panels can't function without silver. It's used in every single cell, and newer, high-efficiency panels use even more. There is no substitute. And then there's the explosion in electric vehicles. EVs require up to 50 grams of silver each, nearly double the amount used in traditional combustion engines. With global EV sales expected to hit 30 million units by 2030, silver demand from this sector alone is on a warpath. But the story doesn't stop there. Silver's role in data centers, AI chips, and 5G infrastructure is growing faster than anyone predicted. The electronics sector now accounts for more than 465 million ounces of silver consumption. And as the world transitions to an ultra-connected, digital-first economy, those numbers are only going to climb. This isn't speculation. These are hard numbers backed by government mandates, corporate megatrends, and a planet that's racing toward net zero. And all of it funnels into one simple truth. Industrial demand is not just supporting silver. It's cornering it. Every ounce pulled into a solar farm or embedded in a circuit board is an ounce that won't be coming back. This isn't a demand wave. It's a demand war. And silver is the battleground.
You've been the minister of corruption and you've been plundering your country, and then suddenly the insurgents dash across the border and you're in trouble. You know, you run for it, and you don't run with gold, you run with silver. Sorry, not with silver. You don't run with gold, you run with Bitcoin, because you can get that out of the airport. You certainly can't get gold out because it's too heavy, and you certainly can't get it out in silver. So you get your money. Bitcoin is for flight, gold is for war. Now, silver is really the hedge of the common man. And the reason for that is you can buy your groceries in silver. I mean, you know, you shouldn't really try it right now. But, you know, you imagine the terrible situation where the confetti was valueless and you wanted to buy yourself a chicken. Well, you'd buy it with a dime, wouldn't you? You could actually buy the old silver American coins in a sack, yeah, at whatever it is, an ounce, $40 an ounce or something. You buy what they call junk silver. And that could be money in Armageddon. That would be money. You could take your quarter down, which is what it's actually about, a quarter of an ounce of silver. So that's $10. It's like a 10, like today's 10 or $20 bill, right? And you could say, here's my quarter, I'll buy that, you know, case of beer. So silver is a good transactional currency for normal transactions, and is, in a way, I wouldn't say lashed to gold, but there is that connection, that historical connection that goes back to the beginning of time, which is, you know, gold is your heavy currency that you probably, you know, stash under your bed or take down the bank, or people always say bury it in the garden, but I have no idea why you want to do that. But silver is your transactional currency, and then copper is the poor man's currency, and you know, you buy a pint of beer with a copper coin. So, you know, that is the hierarchy of value in precious metals. Right. But it's only so much. When you think there's only 10 times as much silver as there's gold, there's only so much disparity between prices of silver and gold that you can get. So it will naturally get dragged up. And, you know, the ratios, I mean, these days are 100 to 1, but there's really no big demand. It's still kind of niche. You're still kind of in a niche market. If you say, oh, I bought loads of silver and I bought loads of gold and I'm worried about the future, people would go, oh, okay. But if that becomes more and more mainstream, if tension continues to rise and gold goes to 4,000 or 5,000, silver will go with it. And if you know, precious silver is one precious metal, but there are several. If you look at platinum, they only make 100. It's so little of this. I have to check my numbers again, but I've got it in my head. I keep reminding myself, keep looking out just to make sure I'm not making an idiot of myself. 200 tons of platinum a year. 200 tons.
Yes.
And it's 1,200. I mean, when I was saying this a few weeks ago, it was $950 an ounce, but now it's 1,200. But, you know, it could easily go to parity with gold, which is 3,400 an ounce. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly where it used to be. But they only make 200 tons. And guess what? A lot of it's made in Russia. And they're not even allowed to sell it. Well, I'm sure that doesn't stop them. But, you know, there aren't many places that make it. And only 200 tons of a precious metal, which is very, very important in future tech. And, you know, there it is languishing around. And palladium is even more of a startling difference in price. So if you look at gold and then you look at platinum, palladium, silver, they've decoupled. And the reason they've decoupled is that gold is for war and countries are buying it. And investment banks are not going to muck about and try to, you know, corner the market and push the private investor around to make a buck, you know, letting them buy and then pushing them out and making them sell again. Can't play that game with governments. Can't short gold when governments are buying. So they've stepped aside and let it run, and it's running. And while there are, you know, bombs falling in several places in the world in a major way. It's a one-way thing, isn't it? And even if they all broke out and Israel stopped, and the Ukraine-Russian war stopped, well, I mean, would that really make everybody relax? Would everybody be calm now? You'd still have situations in Asia. You'd still have an inherent situation in between Ukraine and Russia and maybe Belarus and Poland and all that lot. It would still be a ticking time bomb. It would still be a powder keg. And the Middle East, well, it's gone from being a powder keg to actually being a thing now. And escalation, well, I mean, it doesn't have to escalate, does it? But I mean, it's hardly, even if it didn't escalate and they all went back to sleep again, is Iran going to stop digging bunkers and trying to enhance uranium? Are they ever going to be trusted not to? I mean, it's not going away, is it? And then you've got Pakistan and India. I mean, cutting off each other's rivers and stuff like that. And then you've got Taiwan and China, and then you've got America. I mean, it's just a complicated bag of spaghetti of ever increasing tension, and precious metals will not go down in value under that environment. And then you're not even looking at inflation, are you? If you look at inflation, which apparently is not going to happen now, or so does Mr. Trump say, so and I believe him, maybe. All these tariffs, well, that's certainly going to have an impact on the cost of goods. Yeah. And there's so much out there to go wrong. If you're in a situation, it doesn't matter whether you agree with the people doing it or not, if they've got stability, that's quite a good thing. If you've got a stable situation going on, even if you've got slow glide from greatness into mediocrity, well, worse things happen at sea. But when you go into a state of not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow and what new idea is going to come up and disrupt this, I mean, they're going to be pulling Harvard down now, one minute, and next minute they're going to be banning French students coming to colleges, and the next minute they're going to stop chips being shipped to China and blah 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 blah, and the next minute there's going to be 50% tariffs, and then it's going to be 25, and it's going to be 100. That is pure volatility. And precious metals love that, absolutely love that. Because when people watch that, I mean, if they all switched off their Twitter or whatever it's called this week, they all switched off their Musk feed. If they all got off of YouTube, if they all started listening to, YouTube rain, 5 hour rain videos of relaxation and zen, well, silver and gold will go down. But the moment you go on and you start reading the news, boy, you want to buy precious metals, don't you? So that's not going to change, is it?
If you want to know just how undervalued silver really is, look no further than the gold-silver ratio, a metric that has quietly been flashing red for years. Right now, gold trades at nearly 100 times the price of silver. That's a ratio so extreme it makes a mockery of history. For most of the past 50 years, the average was closer to 60 to 1. Geologically, silver is only about 17 times more abundant than gold in the Earth's crust. So how does it make any sense that gold is 100 times more expensive? It doesn't. And that's exactly the point. This extreme divergence has become one of the most powerful indicators in the entire precious metals market. Every time the ratio stretches this far, it snaps back with force. And when it does, silver doesn't just play catch-up, it launches into orbit. During past rebalancing periods, we've seen silver explode past 400% gains while gold barely doubled. The compression is violent, and it rewards those who see it coming. Peter Krauth has gone on record saying we could see the ratio drop to 40 to 1, or even 30 to 1. At current gold prices, that would put silver above $100 an ounce without any further movement from gold at all. And that's without factoring in the industrial demand, the supply deficits, or the monetary chaos that's about to hit. But this isn't just about numbers on a chart. This is about market psychology. Investors are starting to realize that silver's low price isn't a reflection of its value. It's a distortion. A distortion created by years of neglect, manipulation, and institutional disinterest. But that disinterest is changing. And once the ratio begins to revert to its historical mean, the move in silver won't be gradual. It will be explosive. Because when silver decides to catch up to gold, it doesn't take the stairs.
Et cetera, et cetera.
It takes the
I mean,
elevator.
politicians will promise anything to get elected. So they can get 50,000 votes by saying we're going to audit Fort Knox. They'll say we're going to audit Fort Knox. And if they thought it was going to get 50,000 votes for saying we're going to halve the price of tickets to Disneyland, they'd say we're going to halve the price of tickets to Disneyland. That's kind of what they do. I don't think there's any doubt there's a large amount of gold in Fort Knox. I mean, you know, the fact that some of it is made out of gold coins, which are only 95% gold and 5% copper, I think that's what coin bars are made out of. That's another matter. And the fact that maybe some countries that put in pure gold and if they ask for it back would end up with coin bars is another matter. But there's undoubtedly a huge amount of gold in Fort Knox. I mean, unless there's someone been sneaking in there and stealing it, which is seems pretty unlikely. You know, hi, I'm a bomber. I'm just coming to visit. I'm just carrying this heavy rucksack out with me.
Routine check.
You know, it's unlikely. It's unlikely there are people walking out of Fort Knox with gold bars. Although it must be said, back in the Victorian period, a guy wrote to the chairman of the Bank of England and said, "I can get into your vault, and I can steal all the gold I wanted to if I wanted to." And I'll tell you what. I'll be down there on Wednesday at midnight, standing in your vault, and I'll show you how I got in. And they went, "Oh, really? Oh, well, we better kind of go in and make sure this is a hoax." And they went in, there he was. He found a way in through the sewers. He was a sewage man. And so, you know, he could have been going in there and taking the gold bars out, but he didn't. And he got a reward. But, you know, so stranger things have happened. But I think it's extremely unlikely that it's not there. And, you know, at the end of the day, it would just be what? How much is that? $4 trillion worth of gold or something down there? It would be a very large loss. But you know, it wouldn't be the end of the world for sure. And gold's never going to be re-monetized. Gold is just another asset, and it has a use case. Assets have use cases. You've got a house, you live in it. Yeah, you've got a farm, you can grow cows on it. Yeah, assets have a value, and you've got a pretty Picasso. People like pretty Picassos on their walls, and rich people paid money for that use case of an asset. And there's a use case for gold, and the reason they store it in vaults and park tanks on it is that if you're up the creek without a paddle, gold is your paddle. Gold is what you buy stuff with. And that's why America ended up with all of it, because it was the place that would give you bullets for gold, boats for gold, tanks for gold, planes for gold. Yeah, and they only take as much, so X amount of paper before they said, "Yeah, your money, yeah. Could you just send the gold? Because that's what we want." No. We don't want your government bond. No, don't want that. We don't want your paper money. No. We don't want that. No, we want the gold. Just send us the gold." And there's another story I told on a podcast, which is, I love this story. So, Second World War, Nazis doing their thing, and Portugal is a fascist state. Okay. I think I've got that right. I think I'm pretty sure they were a fascist state. So was
Yeah, I think so.
so anyway. So the Germans go, "Yeah, it's a tungsten. We like the tungsten for the armor-piercing shells for our Tiger tanks, or whatever their name, the Ruys. So we're going to send you some English £5 notes because we've got a whole load of them that we captured, and we'll send them to you. You send us the tungsten." So the Portuguese send them the tungsten. They send them the English £5 notes, and then someone went, "Where are you getting these fives from?" And they went, "Oh, you know, we captured the English £5 notes. Yeah, well, they seem to be a little bit, I don't know, we don't like them. They're a little bit, oh, they look a little dodgy to us." And the Germans went, no, we are not printing them." And they were printing English £5 notes, the Germans, and paying the Portuguese for their tungsten in forged £5 notes. Yeah, and the Portuguese went, "Whoa, that's enough of the English forged fivers. If you want to buy our tungsten from here on in, it's gold." Yeah, and that is what gold is for. Yeah, you can obviously fake gold with tungsten, actually, funny enough. But, you know, overall, gold is gold. And if you want to pay in gold, people, you know, can check it and do the test and da da da. And it is what it is. And that's why gold is for war, because people want to get paid in it. And the trouble is with silver, the value is not high enough in terms of density. You can't really get the volume of money in X amount of space that you can with gold. You know, if you want to fly a ton of gold, doable. You fly a ton of gold, silver. Well, you know, I don't. What is a ton of silver these days? Half a million, something like that. Yeah, one bar of gold is what sort of bar of gold is a million, isn't it?
While silver remains the most undervalued asset in the entire metals market, central banks around the world are quietly making a historic pivot, and their focus isn't silver, it's gold. In 2025 alone, central banks have bought over 1,000 tons of gold, marking the fourth straight year of massive accumulation. Global holdings are now at 36,000 tons, pushing levels we haven't seen since 1965. And here's what makes it even more chilling. 95% of central banks say they're planning to buy more. But why does this matter for silver? Because gold is the warning flare. It's the signal that the global elite no longer trust the dollar, no longer trust fiat systems, and are preparing for something seismic. When governments start hoarding hard assets, it's not for diversification, it's for survival. Countries like Poland and China are ramping up reserves again, even after brief pauses. They're moving out of treasuries and into metal. And as geopolitical tensions flare, from sanctions to trade wars, this kind of gold hoarding becomes a form of economic warfare. But while gold is being stockpiled behind closed doors, silver is being ignored, or so it seems. This is where the opportunity lies. Because when gold breaks new ground and becomes too expensive or too scarce, what do you think comes next? Silver. It's the shadow asset, the lagging cousin, the metal that still flies under the radar, until it doesn't. And when the floodgates open, when retail investors, institutions, and even governments begin to realize that silver offers the same inflation protection, the same hard asset security, but at a fraction of the price, the shift could be violent. So while the central banks load up on gold, silver remains in stealth mode. But stealth mode doesn't mean invisible, it means underestimated. And the longer that continues, the more violent the catch-up will be.
Ton of gold is 100 million. So you can see that you know, flying...
gold is just much more economical.
Yeah, the old word for it would be it's a heavier currency. And it is the heaviest currency. And that's its positioning things. But you can't push gold up forever without it dragging silver along. Because, you know, as a consumer will go, oh, gold's gone up. I think I need, I don't understand why. I'm always getting a bit sweaty here. I think I need to buy silver. Oh, blimey, look at that. It's $5,000 an ounce. And I a tenth of an ounce, that's $500. Well, I can buy a small sack of silver for that. I can buy 10 big shiny coins for that. I'll have the big shiny coins. And, you know, that is the drop down from gold, is silver. I mean, I used to, a long time ago, I had this idea that every time I went to America, I would buy $3,000 of silver coins, i.e. the currency value of American silver coins, $3,000 of, which I can't remember what that's worth, but it's worth a lot more than $3,000. But you can bring it into the country, and when they say how many dollars have you brought in, you can say $3,000 because its currency is still got the denomination on it, and you can still spend it in America. It's still legitimate currency, so you can bring it in. So I thought every time I go to America, I bring back a sack of silver. And then I realized that after about 5 years of doing that, I would have this mountain of silver coins in sacks, and I'd look like Scrooge McDuck. So I thought, I probably won't do that. But you can see how the flip side of that is, if you wanted to build up a stash of currency and precious metal that you could actually spend on a day-to-day basis, that would be silver. So, you know, initially gold runs, and then it's only natural for silver to run after it. And it's only natural for platinum to run. It's only natural for palladium to run, because they are all relatively tied together. So, you know, silver, in a sense, is lagging. But the market for silver is a retail market, as they would say in the financial markets, it's a retail market. And if and when the retail market wakes up, it will go to $50 an ounce. It will go to $100 an ounce. Not a problem there.
Just as the silver market reaches a boiling point, an unexpected accelerant is stepping back onto the world stage, Donald Trump. Love him or hate him, his return to political relevance is injecting a level of uncertainty and volatility that could pour gasoline on the already raging fire in precious metals. Because Trump doesn't just shake things up, he rips the playbook in half, rewrites the rules, and dares the global economy to keep up. Markets remember what happened last time. Trade wars with China, tariffs that disrupted global supply chains, explosive rhetoric that rattled foreign currencies and sent safe haven demand through the roof, with his influence once again growing and the very real possibility of him returning to the White House or shaping policy from behind the scenes, investors are bracing for a second round of Trump-era chaos. And in times of chaos, silver doesn't just survive, it thrives. Trump's economic nationalism reignites fears of protectionism, supply chain disruptions, and global decoupling, all of which put immense pressure on fiat currencies and inflate the value of real hard assets. Meanwhile, political polarization in the U.S. is reaching fever pitch, making legislative predictability a fantasy. In this environment, gold may be the first place institutions run, but silver is where the smart money multiplies. Because here's the truth. Trump's unpredictability isn't just a political risk. It's a market catalyst. When central banks panic, when inflation surges, when the dollar stumbles under the weight of renewed volatility, silver becomes the ultimate response. Cheaper, faster moving, and tied to both financial fear and industrial strength, silver doesn't wait for the headlines to confirm the trend. It leads the charge. And as Trump's policies begin to ripple through global markets again, don't be surprised if silver's price action starts looking less like a rally and more like a detonation.
I've always been a computer person, but these days I'm a chemist. I'm a environmental chemist. I'm working with universities in critical strategic metals, and that's my, as they say, that's my bag, man. You know, and my stuff is rare earth. Okay, so you know the Chinese are in a very interesting situation. Let's wind the clock back. Okay, Britain, when the great empire of Britain was at its greatest, it was called the workshop of the world. Okay, and it had a reserve currency and everything was great. And then, you know, time went on, they made a few blunders, like slaughtering all their children in France. And America became the workshop of the world and got the reserve currency and became the dominant hegemon. They became the number ones. And they were the workshop of the world. Well, who's the workshop of the world now? So there you go. They are now the hegemon, but they don't want to be the hegemon because they don't really care about, you know, running around places and saying, stop that. That's naughty. You need to be like us. They're not really into that. They're not like the Americans have been doing since 19, whenever they decided to join the Second World War. They want to do business. They want to get rich. And they want to, they probably, you know, think that they've got a great system and they've got reason to believe that. So they've been in a relationship with the US where the US has gone around wasting its treasure and its blood on fixing other people's problems. Yeah. And they have dissipated their treasure. America has spent all its money, the money that it built up in the Second World War and probably the post-war years. They've blown it all. It's all been blown. And you can see the government squandering it right now. And, you know, I think China just goes, well, we're number one, really, but we don't want to be the reserve currency because that way madness lies. I mean, if you think about all of America's problems, most of them stem from being the reserve currency. Yeah. I mean, this being a reserve currency being a great thing. Yeah, really? You think so? Well, it means that America bleeds away its capital to the rest of the world. That's not a good thing. So that the government can borrow money so it can squander it on rubbish. I mean, spend $100 million a year counting trees. That's not a Musk thing. That's something that I dug up about 10 years ago. America spends $100 million counting trees. That's great. That's great. Oh. They could be 90. I could tell them it was a lot. But, you know, that sort of spending, that sort of frivolousness, you know, China looks at that and goes, okay, well, we like all these assets that are coming our way. And we're getting all these American treasuries. Oh, we've actually sold them. We haven't told you we sold them, but we have. I mean, their base of American treasuries, which was, oh, they're going to sell American treasuries. Well, they had $1.2 trillion of it. They've only got $800 billion now, only. I use that. What? But don't you think they might have hedged that away? Don't you think they might have swapped that? Don't you think they might have done some deals with some investment banks to you know, take those treasury bonds and make them go somewhere else while they look like they've still got them? I mean, that's what investment banks do for a living. So I don't think China's holding much US treasuries anymore. And how much gold? Well, probably quite a lot, but you wouldn't want to tell anybody, would you? Because for a start, gold is for war. And two, it's, you know, it's not nice if they're getting all these treasury bonds for all their plastic junk they're selling to America, and then they're selling them and not telling anybody. I mean, you know, it's this geopolitics, isn't it? It's spy versus spy. It's all that nonsense that causes all this trouble. I mean, if you think about it, the greatest disasters wreaked on humanity come out of government. And I'm not an anarchist, but it's a fact, right? They slip up and, you know, terrible, terrible, terrible things happen. So you've got this dynamic, intergovernmental dynamic, where at least America's spoiling for a conflict. And, you know, Russia's obviously spoiling for a conflict. And, you know, you look at the Middle East, when are they ever not on the edge of spoiling for a conflict? And you've got Pakistan and India, you know, at sixes and sevens. And, you know, it doesn't even count the sort of other minor nonsenses that go on all over the place. So precious metals are kind of like a one-way bet. And unless somebody breaks out, unless somebody, some great leader steps forward and says, come on, boys and girls, let's all be friends now. Unless they go to a G7 meeting, G8 meeting, or wherever it was last week, and say, let's all sit around the table, sort this out, rather than go, I'm going home now. So, if you look at the situation, how often do you see any news that makes you think, oh, I need to sell some of my precious metals? This is all going right. You just don't see it, do you? And even if you discount the absolutely abhorrent media that pumps nothing but venom and ugliness into your face through media, even if you discount that down to being mainly lies, it's still not an environment where you go, oh, I think I'm going to swap my gold for some fear. So it's kind of like a long way, a one way long term trend, isn't it? Which has been, I've enjoyed. Has not been precious metal centric. It's only now when it's the absolute obvious thing that I am long that, and I'm a little bit bearish about what's coming up next. But give it a couple of years. I mean, if Trump loses the midterms, that will be a little bit of non-bad news that will probably soften precious metals. But if he gets them, then that's going to be very, very strong for precious metals. And even if he doesn't win the House, there's going to be still 2 more years of interesting times. And there'll still be a Putin, and there'll still be the Mullahs probably, and there'll still be Pakistan and India at each other's throats, and China will still be looking at Taiwan with envious eyes. So and there'll still be the printathon. I mean, the printathon is actually a thing, and it's not a bad thing. People think that inflation is bad, but deflation is much worse. Yeah, but the point is, you want inflation at a creeping level of a couple of percent, and then nobody notices, and everything goes on la la la. But the moment it starts to hit 4 or 5, it gets a bit spicy, and if it goes to 6 or 7, it definitely hurts. And then if it gets to 10, 11, 12, the wheels start to come off, and at the moment, the Fed has been, I know everybody in the precious metal community doesn't like the Fed, but actually they've kept the wheels on. And anybody that lives in a house with a lot of value in it can thank them for that. And so, it hasn't been all bad. It hasn't brought about the apocalypse where gold is $20,000 an ounce for sure. But nonetheless, that stability has been an important thing. But the fragility of the whole system is increasing little by little. And the tension is increasing little by little. And until that turns around, precious metals are silver, silvery, or golden, or however you want to put it. But it's not going to necessarily just get worse and 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 worse. There will be a turn. There always is a turn, hopefully. So, it's a matter of I bought all this stuff when it was cheap, and it's still not expensive. And I will sell it when it's expensive. When everybody wants to buy it, they can buy mine. And when nobody wants to buy it, I'll buy theirs. That's the way that I run. And at the moment, I think that, the time when everybody wants to buy it hasn't come yet. Although, having said that, a few weeks ago, I was reading nothing but headlines on silver moving, but it's gone all quiet again. So I like it. I like it when nobody's jumping up and down screaming, oh, silver, silver. My neighbor made a fortune in silver. I've got to buy silver. That is normally the end of the run. But I'm not a perma bear. I'm bullish when it's going up, and I'm bearish when I think it's going to go down. And I haven't been in precious metals pretty much ever up until about a year ago, when it was obviously, well, having said that, when COVID happened and I knew there was going to be inflation, I bought a lot, and then blooming stuff didn't go up. And I thought, oh, okay, right. Oh, well, that's a bit of a mistake. Then I've got the inflation bit right. I've got the precious metal bit wrong, but I kept an eye on it. And when it got to that point where it suddenly flipped and it went into began to go into overdrive, I piled into it. And that's where we are. We're in a gold is in overdrive. It will drag up silver, platinum, palladium. It will drive all those guys up. And until the story changes, it's going to keep going that way. And you can read my stuff in Forbes. You can read my stuff in Seeking Alpha occasionally. You can read my old investment books, which are now quite ancient, but they're still mainly relevant. I'm building a site called a new FN, which is at the moment going to be only, well, is only in by invite only, but if your viewers want to, get an early entrance to it, they can drop an email and I'll, we'll let them in when it's ready for them.
This is it. The pressure, the fear, the policies, the deficits. It all leads to this one moment. The idea of $500 silver used to be dismissed as delusional, the kind of wild-eyed prediction you'd only hear from the most die-hard silver bugs. But now, with every day that passes, that number looks less like fantasy and more like an inevitability. Let's connect the dots. You've got 5 consecutive years of crushing supply deficits. You've got industrial demand reaching levels never seen before, draining global reserves at a speed that cannot be reversed. You've got the gold-to-silver ratio screaming undervaluation, pointing toward a violent reversion. You've got central banks hoarding gold like it's wartime. And now, you've got Trump back in the mix, injecting volatility, inflation down, and geopolitical instability into a system already teetering. All of this is coiling silver like a spring, tighter and tighter, with each new headline, each new policy, each new ounce pulled from the market. The question is no longer if silver will break out. The question is how high it will go once it does. Could it stop at $50? Could it run to $100? Or will this finally be the moment when silver tears through every ceiling and aims straight for $500? Because when silver runs, it doesn't creep, it explodes. And once it breaks out of the cage it's been held in for over a decade, there may be no turning back. That's why the smart money isn't waiting. They're positioning now, before the fireworks. So if you've made it this far, you know what's coming. We're in the early stages of what could be the most violent silver rally in history, and $500 might just be the beginning. If you want to stay ahead of this historic shift, make sure to subscribe. We're bringing daily updates, deep dives, and no-nonsense insights to help you ride the wave. And remember, this isn't financial advice. Always speak to a licensed professional before making any investment decisions.
This is again. I mean, if you see too many of my YouTubes, you'll hear this story a couple of times. But a long time ago, maybe 30 years ago, maybe 25, 6, I was in Scotland, up to my
That's where I am.
belly button. Ah, well, I was in the Buccleuch land on the borders, and he's got a river of gold, or he had a river of gold. They took it all out, and but you could still go there if you got permission and get in the river and pan away and see if you could find some gold. So I was in this river panning away, and the guy who was doing it was some old, crusty gold and panning fiend. And I said, "Oh, I think I've got a bit of gold. I've got a bit of gold." And he came over and looked at it. He said, "No, that's mica. But here's the trick: if you think it's gold, it isn't. If you know it's gold, it is. So just bear that in mind. When you see something, you think it's gold, it isn't. If you see it and you go, that's gold, it is. And that you should try to live by that in investment. In gambling, i.e. trading short term and all that nonsense. Yeah, that's just gambling. Be aware that's gambling. And if you do it, you'll win half the time, you lose half the time, and what you will lose is the cost of the transaction over time. Okay, and that will make you negative sum game, and that will erode your capital surely but surely until you've got none. Right? But if you're actually investing, that's different. And that normally the difference is the time line over which you're putting your money down. So if you want to put a position on something, if you think it's good, it's not. If you know it's good, it is. And if you don't know the difference between thinking and knowing, you just wait until you get something. You go, I know that's right. And maybe it doesn't come very often, but you have to wait for that. And then the more skillful you are, the more you'll know it. And the less you'll think it. And if you're not very skillful, you might have to wait a couple of years before you bump into something. You go, I know that's a good one. And that is really the core. You just have to study until you see something. Like today, there's a stock I saw. Oh, no, that one's going up. They always do when they're like that. So I bought a bunch. Yeah. But I built up that experience over umpteen years so that I can look at a lot of things and find quite a lot of, oh, I know that one is going. Oh, look at that. That's going. But to start out with, you won't see much that is going to go up or down if you're going to want to go short. And if you're a novice, you don't want to go short anyway. So you just have to keep looking at stuff, reading up, studying, and then you'll see something. You go, that's going up. Look at that. Why hasn't anyone else seen that? Look at that. That's got, oh, that's some of that. And that's really the base of it. Study and research. And then you will bump into something that screams at you. And then, when the market shouts at you, pay attention.